The future is no longer in your imagination.
Fostering an open forum.
Never heard anything like it before.
Urban 75 Radio.
Welcome back to Urban 75 Radio. Later on in the show, we have a 30-minute slot from Hiccup, covering some of the best tunes we've received from fellow urbanites. Later on, Piers Gibbon's going to be provoking a political discussion, looking at the results of the election and what, if anything, it might mean. But now, we're going back to the panel discussion on health, relationships and sexuality. The track played in the middle is Days Go by Ninja Boy. And during the discussion, we'll be looking at sex drives. What's normal? Is there a normal, healthy sex drive? What can affect it? And then we'll be looking at body modification. Who's had what done? Who's thinking of having something done? And why do we do it?
Urban 75 Radio.
Sex drive. What is it that governs one's sex drive? It waxes and it wanes. It goes up and down. What sort of thing drives it? One's libido and how voracious our sexual appetites are. I could go around individually and ask everybody, how's yours? But perhaps that wouldn't be the best idea.
Only if one can sell us to go in a really attractive shade of purple. It's getting edited, isn't it?
In fact, no, I will go around the table at least, making one stop. And I'll ask Cameron, how's yours?
I find it goes up the more available sex is.
That's a handy
way. Practically without limit. Sometimes you have to sleep, but...
Refuel occasionally.
Yeah, although you can get pizza delivered to bed.
Okay, a more general and slightly less unfair question then. I mean, what you were saying just now about how it goes up depending on how available sex is and how it's there, that, I think, is something that happens to me. I went through a period of having... this is probably more detailed than anybody wants to know about me. However, I'll share it anyway. I went through a period of having absolutely no sex whatsoever when I was doing my degree, and found that I was absolutely not interested at all. And of course, when the degree ended, it absolutely shot up enormously and was completely ferocious and quite scary.
I find there is a time at about between four and 6 weeks with no sex when it suddenly goes, just hits you like a truck. And actually going past that, it's downhill after that, but there's this 2 weeks when it's absolutely...
Well, at the forefront of everything,
yes,
you think about.
Everything you do is arranged around fulfilling this. And then if you go past that, mm-hmm, then it's just downhill and the amount you think about it tails off. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, at any rate, that's mm-hmm been my experience.
No, I'd agree with you on that. I think if you don't, you know, if you're not getting any, you're unlikely to get any. And the prospect of you getting any in the near to medium future is somewhere between less than zero and zero, then your interest just drops. I mean, I remember at one point last year, I went without for over 7 months. And you know, it got to a point where it was just, you know, something that happens to other people and it's not a problem. But as soon as I sort of, you know, got over that, like I say, I was going through a fairly bad patch in my life at that point anyway. And, you know, now as I'm, you know, in a happy relationship now, and so on and so forth, my sex drive has shot up again, and all the attendant fun and games that causes.
What about your sort of general level when you're with somebody, when you are getting some? What do you do if your sex drive is different to theirs? If one of you wants it all the time and one of you doesn't,
gnaw your own arm off in frustration. The most common way of dealing with it.
I don't know. I guess I can sort of like answer this. I don't mind being sort of like quite personal here. Although I guess I really have very much enjoyed sex the last 4 years or so, before that, so sort of like in my teenage years and just, you know, 20 and... Yeah, teenage years and the age of 20, I really actually, to be honest, didn't see what all the fuss was about, with the exception of one particular person I had been with for about 4 months. But aside from that, I really actually was quite amazed that people weren't so potty about it. Then suddenly I hit 21, it was like, oh, where's this been all my life? I don't know, looking back on that, it could be a variety of reasons. I was very stressed out. I was depressed for periods of that as well, which, of course, lowers sex drive. Mm. But I think also it was partly due to a fear of not actually being a good enough partner, which obviously sort of like led to not being able to relax and therefore not enjoying it. And I guess I sort of like... I guess I'd expect that if I ever sort of like... got back in that mindset, it would also like reduce my sex drive again, because when you're sort of like constantly on edge, you do get no enjoyment from it. And also it might be partly to do with the fact that obviously the guys I was with at that age were obviously a little bit younger, a little bit less experienced, and possibly a little crap.
To any of you listening out there.
Okay, so it's somewhat, you mentioned age, it is somewhat age related. I've been told that my sex drive's about to take a complete plummet. I'm 34 and I'm told that in my mid-30s it's going to drop.
No, it's the other way around. It's the other way around. For a woman, you reach your sexual peak apparently when you're in your 40s or about 40.
So it keeps on getting later. Yeah. 30 to 40 is what...
Yeah, so, well, I'm speaking from personal experience, so it can only get better from now on.
Explains why my dad looks so tired all the time.
No, it can be a real problem when you're in a relationship and, you know, you've got differing sex drives. I remember I was in a relationship quite some time ago whereby I was terribly up for it, trying this, that and the other thing, wanting it as often as was humanly possible and occasionally inhumanly possible. And he really did like nothing more than snuggling up with a good book and a mug of hot cocoa. And I wouldn't have said it killed the relationship, but it certainly didn't help matters when I was, like I say, gnawing my own arm off in sheer frustration whilst he was desperately trying to sit down with the new, you know, with some new science fiction novel or whatever. And it can cause real problems because, you know, if you're on the higher libido scale, you're going, well, what the hell's wrong with me? You know, I'm right here. And, you know, they're going, well, you know, you're a mad sex-crazed lunatic, you. You know.
Do you think
it can be really problematic?
Do you think there's something that people see generally as being slightly unsavoury about a woman with a really healthy sex drive? Do you think there's a sort of degree of sexism in...
Yeah, women are often called predatory, aren't they?
Yeah.
Things like that.
I'm often called predatory.
Oh.
Well, that's just you, Cam, though. I guess sort of like female sexuality is being more accepted these days. I mean, I guess women are still more easily called sluts than men. I think what I'd sort of like argue, though, as well, isn't maybe so much single women with a healthy sexual appetite who are so much looked down upon now, but sort of like women who are mothers or in relationship who have affairs. I mean, obviously, it's not an ideal state of affairs, but I do sort of like feel that actually women do get looked... Women who basically play away from home, I think, are much more ostracised by our society than men who play away from home. Men kind of like get sort of like, it kind of gets brushed off a little bit. Oh, that's just men doing what they do. Where, of course, women, it goes back to this whole idea, my God, they're whore-like, they're evil, they're in league with the devil.
Well, it was like that, the whole David Blunkett affair last year. Boris Johnson had an affair with that Quinn woman, and he was, oh, it's just the way he is. Crazy Tory party member there. And then with David Blunkett, it was, you know, it's terribly shocking that that woman led him astray there, and she's playing away from home, and she's a mother, and I'm shocked and appalled, and she should be put in the, you know, should be pilloried and this, that and the other thing. And it was, you know, when the men were doing it, it was just old boys together, look at them there, you know.
I think it was actually Blunkett was the one who lost his job.
Well, he did, but that was
Other things. Actually,
that was over, other parts of it, like the fact that he was using his position to get favours in and things. But the central crux of it was, I mean, the papers leapt on this woman.
She was
a bad mother. Yeah. She was a bad person. She was this, that, and the other thing. Whereas all the men involved in it were, you know, oh, look at them there, you know, getting their oats in elsewhere. That's not bad, that. Yeah, and it is such a, you know, it's such an inequality. Not saying that, you know, people should play away from home and shag anything that moves, but, you know, the equal standard should apply. You know, if it's okay for men to do it, then, you know, and if it's seen in tabloids and in the broadsheets, it's okay for the men to do it, but God forbid a woman should, you know, spread her legs for anything other than, you know, her
king and
husband.
Country.
Yeah.
Man on
the I was going to say husband, but, you know, if it's king and country...
Is there something you want to share with us, Agent Sparrow?
No. I guess also going on from that, though, I also sort of like have a few friends who, when they were single, sort of like basically had healthy sexual drives and would seek men, obviously, to fulfil those needs. And they've got to a stage now and they've slept with sort of like about late 20s, early 30s amounts of men. And, you know, one particular friend sort of like turns around to me and says, you know, I really hope it works out, my boyfriend, because I don't want to actually sleep with any more people. And she kind of knows that there's no way this makes her a slut, but on some deeper level, on some way, it does make her feel that way. And I still think that those sort of like ideas are still in our society, that essentially okay, maybe now it's fine for women to sleep around a little bit, but still they shouldn't be quite doing exactly what men do.
Yeah. Actually, similarly, it must be quite tough if you're a bloke with a really low sex drive. I mean, we're all sort of laughing and assuming here that men are all sort of ferociously rampaging around trying to get sex, yeah. And as we know, that is often the case. But it's not always. I mean, the boyfriend you were talking about, Rosie, who really wasn't particularly interested.
He really wasn't, you know.
Right.
But it was also, you know, when he did want it, then, you know, I would have to be in exactly the same mood, and God forbid if I wasn't. But, no, it was quite strange, especially sort of talking to my friends about it. You know, as one does when one is slightly drunk and so on and so forth, and all girls together. And it was a, you know, what do you mean? You know, he talks about it quite a lot and things. You know, yeah, but there's a difference between what he says when he's with his friends and what he's actually like. And he really wasn't that highly sexed. I think he did feel quite bad about it because, you know, at least it wasn't highly sexed at the time. You know, recent reports from spies I have suggest something entirely different. But this goes back to the whole libido question. But, you know, certainly he really did have, you know, he did feel quite ashamed of it, that he wasn't terribly up for it.
So there's a pressure then, isn't there, to sort of, you know, conform to what's seen as the norm.
Yeah.
And for some, and that must be quite difficult if, you know, it's about personal things, isn't it? And I think also at different periods of your life, again, you know, thinking back, after you've had a baby, for example, your sex drive just drops. The last thing you think about is it's just another chore at that point. And like you was mentioning about if you're stressed and, you know, if there's problems at work and family things. So I think it, throughout your life, it's all exactly what you were saying, waxes and wanes in a different time. And then you've got the added pressure of thinking, oh, but we're supposed to be having it so many times a week, day, month, whatever as well. And
yeah, the women's magazines don't really help that as well. It's
no.
Like, not only are you meant to look a certain way and have a certain stage of your career and all of this, but you're also meant to be having sex twice a day and absolutely loving it.
Yeah.
And be able to put your hands, your legs behind your own head, someone else's, you know. If you're not having sex with the entire Oxford rowing team, then there's just something wrong with you, you know. It seems utterly impossible to just have your own sex life, you know, without it being compared with other people's.
So what should be something fairly simple ends up being really, really complicated and all time-consuming and thought-consuming as well, doesn't it? You know, it doesn't matter if you want it 50 times in the day, if you can do that.
Yeah.
It's if you meet that with your partner, isn't it? That's the thing.
Thank you.
Urban 75 Radio.
Moving on to the subject of body modification, something sort of looking around, I can see at least some of us do. Rosie, you haven't got your piercing in. Anyway, body modification, tattoos and piercing and that kind of thing. I have to say that I think it's a good idea. A blanket sweeping statement here, having a couple of tattoos myself, but no piercings apart from my ears, which I don't think count. I think we all do that. But where are we now with that? Is it still something extreme and outrageous to do that you can terrify people with, or is it all
I think
passe?
There are degrees of it. I used to be very, very into body modification a few years ago. Again, like I say, going through a period of changing how I looked and coming to terms with myself. At one point, I had 15 piercings.
Gosh.
In various bits and places, as it were. And
I'm trying to count the possible places.
Not the first one. And it was a really...
It's Cameron in the corner counting.
A couple of which I still have. But it was, you know, it was an attempt to make myself look as different as possible. And you know, the usual kickback against society, teenage rebellion, complete nonsense. Didn't get any tattoos then because I thought that, you know, I wasn't ready for one. I have one now. I became quite interested just in the concept as a whole, not just, you know, your tattoos and your piercings and things, but more extreme kinds of body modification. And there are people who do things to themselves that, when I tell people about it in a conversation, they look at me as though I've grown an extra head, and that this sort of thing is just completely in the realms of fantasy. But it is amazing what people do to themselves in an aim to look different and to be different and to become comfortable with themselves.
Yes, I've seen some incredibly large piercings, holes in earlobes.
You're stretching.
And the earlobe being split into to two. I know there are some people who even go as far as getting their tongue bifurcated.
Yeah. There's a very famous model who lives in Camden, works at Cyberdog, called AJ, and she has the split tongue. She also has studs in her head, and I read her journal on the internet. She's actually quite a well-spoken, very interesting person, and she does say that this, you know, she was born to have metal under her skin. This is what makes her happy, and this is how she is. And I've, you know, she puts up photos of her with her incredibly normal family, you know, as she thinks that she looks beautiful and this is how she was born to be, then that's fair enough in my book. I think one thing that came out of getting pierced, then taking them all out, some people are not going to be happy with how they look, and the only way they are is through extreme modification.
Actually, coming on from what you've just said there, though, I mean, obviously, I think she's quite an extreme example, but this whole like thing of being very unhappy with the way you look and wanting to change yourself by using body modification, is this just the other scale, then, of people who are unhappy with the way they look and want to change where they look by cosmetic surgery?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, are they possibly quite comparable, except one group obviously wants to look more like what society generally deems to be beautiful, and one person
mm-hmm.
wants to actually go away from this societal idea of what is beautiful?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a more individualistic take on it. Like I say, lots of people get breast and, you know, breast implants and breast reductions and this, that and the other thing in order to look like every tabloid model that comes off the catwalk. But there are a lot of people out there as well, and particularly on websites like bmezine.com and things, who are going out there to look, you know, as much as they want to be themselves. I mean, there's the very famous case of Lizard Boy in America, who has a tattoo over 98% of his skin, which is of lizard scales, and has got his tongue split and this, that and the other thing, in an attempt to look more like a lizard, because that is how he wants to look. And I mean, I personally don't see a difference between what he's doing to himself or what AJ's doing to herself, and what Cindy Jackson did a few years ago and spent £40,000 on making herself look like a Barbie doll.
And from our point of view, one of them is an individualist who's making themselves look like what they want to look like, and one of them is a societal conformist trying to look as much like a stereotype as they can. And in fact, maybe there's not a hell of a lot of difference between either of these.
I think the problem a lot of people have with this sort of thing is when it goes from being body modification becomes what they would consider to be mutilation. For a lot of people, that would be getting a stud through your tongue or getting a tattoo. For, you know, certainly, I mean, I've read cases of people who have, men who have castrated themselves, not just castrated themselves but removed everything, and have become what they term smoothies, as it were, have removed their nipples and all their genitalia to become more androgynous. And the men are reacting with absolute horror at this suggestion.
I think we're all
not
sitting in
men.
Something of a stunned silence.
So this is what I mean. It's that there's always that limit whereby people think that you're taking the piss, and it's absolutely. I mean, you know, certainly in America there's a good few who've done it. There's a small community here of people who've done it. And, you know, personally, I think if that's, you know, that's their choice, then that's fine with me. I mean, I wouldn't want to remove any part of myself like that. But, you know, I mean, that's fine for them. And it's like the acute body dysmorphia that was talked about in the news a few years ago, people wanting legs taken off or arms taken off because they were deeply, deeply unhappy with that part of their body. And it wasn't so much a, that leg is ugly and that leg is fine. It was an, I will not feel happy with myself until this is gone.
Okay, so given that then, way down at one extreme end of the body modification, I think piercings and tattoos fall somewhere sort of neatly in the middle, perhaps, with a bit of cosmetic surgery, as Agent Sparrow was saying. Sparkling, you haven't got any earrings
ears
in,
pierced,
but you've just got your ears pierced. You haven't had any nipples removed or anything.
No, it's all still there.
I did bump into a lad, I suppose he was a lad in his mid-20s, and he had a vine tattoo on his forehead, and it went like all around his face and down. And I just had to, because I didn't know whether it was real or not, so I had to ask him. I said, is that real? And he just said, yep. He said, it is real. And then I just got sort of like chatting to him, and I just said to him, why, is there a reason why you've done that? He said, exactly what you have just done to me. He said, because you've taken notice of me. He said, and I vowed that I would, he said, I wasn't actually a person that anybody really took any notice of, and I wanted somebody to notice me. He said, and everywhere I go, people talk to me. Because I suppose he must have felt, I don't know, no confidence, low self-esteem. And then he just said that is why he did. He said, it just gets people talking to me, and I do get noticed everywhere I go, and people remember me. And they do. They do remember him.
On the other side of that, I don't want to say too much, but we've just been interviewing, and somebody sort of came along for a candidate, and they had a tattoo, and there's a lot of discussion about whether this would be a suitable candidate because of the kind of clientele that we work with and things like that. And I personally think that's a real shame, but there was that discussion, and I think a lot of people that do have piercings and tattoos must come across that kind of discrimination all the time.
Was it just that they had a tattoo at all, or was it the nature of it?
It was the nature of the tattoo as well, but also the nature of the work and the kind of people that they would be put into meeting. They thought that, you know, it might be alarming for some of the clientele. So,
Rosie, I can see you itching to say something.
I was just thinking that the problem with the recent craze in body modification, I think, is that a lot of people don't take it as seriously as they probably should. I remember meeting someone at university who had just decided she wanted a tattoo and had gone and got what I consider to be an absolutely hideous piece of amateurishly done artwork on herself that took up most of her lower back. And certainly when it comes to tattoos and things, I mean, a lot of people, I think, don't take it as seriously as they should. These things are permanent. They're not going to go away. As you know, as soon as you decide you don't like that band anymore, that tattoo isn't going to magically fade. It will be there for the rest of your life, which is why when I got a tattoo, I made sure it was in a very sort of subtle place. It's on my ankle. You can't see it if I'm wearing trousers. It's a design that I've wanted for years and years and years, and I only got it when I really decided that was what I wanted to have, and that I would confident that I would be happy having it in 30, 40 years' time.
There is definitely a fashion in getting tattoos, isn't there, for that, particularly that spot in the lower back and the Celtic bands, and you can just sort of imagine a whole generation of people growing up and looking identical to each other when probably what they wanted was to look fairly different and outrageous.
And that kind of reminds me of the story of how I got my tattoo when I was 17 years old. Basically in a club with my friends, got extremely drunk, said the next day, look, no matter how hungover I say I am tomorrow, no matter how much I try and get out of it, I'm going to have tattoo done, and if I'm trying to get out of it, you've got to take me to tattoo parlour. So they were true to their word, sort of like frog marched me around there. And I suddenly was thinking, oh shit, oh shit. And of course I could have backed out of it, but 17-year-olds, well, I didn't. And I remember looking around at everything and thinking, oh my God, I just can't imagine myself having any of those. So in the end, on the spot, I picked something in a very discreet place, a very, very tiny design. And if anything, I wouldn't say I regret it now. I guess part of me regrets actually having something that's just a little bit so meh. I mean, I think I'd rather have done that than sort of like got something like a Celtic band or something around my arm, which I think at the time I thought were quite tacky and personally, before I insult anyone.
No, I was interested in the idea of a tattoo, but I've never found anything that I'd be happy with.
It's the problem
in 20, 30 years' time.
It's the problem of body modification for modification's sake and just doing it because, you know, you're bored or, you know, you want to look, you know, you want to be different without knowing why. And, you know, like I say, it is quite a serious thing, and it is quite a permanent thing in a lot of ways. You know, obviously I've got, you know, some scars on my face from when I had piercings done, you know, that are going to be there for, you know, for quite a long time to come. Not that I regret getting them done at any point, but they're always, you know, the mark isn't made now.
Did they need a lot of looking after?
Yeah, they did. I mean, Pierce, again, a lot of people don't seem to realise how much maintenance is required making a piercing, you know, safe and making sure it heals properly. I mean, they do have to be bathed twice a day in saline solution for quite a long time. You have to make sure that they're not knocked or hit or anything like that, that the jewellery is safe for them. I mean, you see people with the most ridiculously unsafe jewellery hanging out of them that's just begging for someone to accidentally catch it, pull it out. I've seen pictures of some hideous, hideous injuries as a result of people just not looking after them because they don't take them seriously enough.
Yeah,
I think that's what happened when I was younger. In my teenage years, I had a tattoo and did have it removed. And consequently, I mean, I had it, I thought I was going in to have it lasered out. And actually what they did was they cut it out. And so I have sort of like a large scar on my arm here. So,
gosh.
You know, it does. I don't wear short sleeve, you know, sort of clothes, you know, tops and things, because it shows and it's horrible. So unfortunately, I did the stupidest thing that anybody can ever do and put a boy's name on it. So, yeah. Oh god, how stupid was that? So, and that, yeah, obviously you want that taken off.
I was going to say, going back to what Rosie was saying about definitely wanting things done, I haven't got many piercings sort of like by these extremes, but I have had my belly button done since 14 years old, and that's something I wanted done for at least a year beforehand.
Gosh, that was quite young.
Yes, I don't know how the hell they actually managed to let me have it done. But when I was 13 years old, I started experimenting with my ears. I basically, now I've got two holes in one ear and four on the other. I think I had seven holes on one ear at some point, and apart from the first two on each ear, I did them all myself. And actually it was quite almost ritualistic in a way. I mean, I was very careful, I sterilised everything, I used proper needles, and I made sure I looked after everything. But I don't know whether or not, going to what Rosie is saying about teenage rebellion, I think part of it was a teenage rebellion thing. But I mean, part of me is really actually wanted to have that about myself, and you know, it's probably part of that why I've still got four in one, even though it's not generally something a lot of 25-year-olds have, I guess.
And I think, let's say, a big part of it is again the ritual that you hear a lot of, the sort of modern primitive movement led by Fakir Musar, which was all about like body modification as a kind of modern ritual, and piercing yourself and even temporary piercing as a way of, let's say, as a ritual. And a lot of people pierce themselves the way Sparrow was talking about, because it means more to them if it's done that way than if they just go into your local Claire's Accessories and someone sticks a gun in your, you know, the piercing gun through it or whatever. I mean, certainly, and also when Sparrow said that she got it done at 14, I'd like to point out that most reputable piercing places won't even touch you until you're 18 years old.
Maybe I was 15.
Consolas, have you got any hidden tattoos or piercings?
Not yet. I've never really been that bothered about piercings. It's never something I ever wanted to have. Really, I did toy with the idea of getting my ears pierced a few years ago, but realised that I just look absolutely hideous, and fortunately decided against it. I sobered up in time. But I've always wanted a tattoo. I've had it since I was about 14.
Do you know what you want?
No, I keep coming, trying. I will actually spend time, sit down, and come up with a design. And since I was about 14, I've been trying to come up with various designs, but have yet to find something that I would actually be happy with. So the search goes on. But at some point, I will have one.
Yeah, so that's pretty similar. I'm not 14, but definitely 16 or 17. I started sort of thinking, well, what? But never got round to, never found something that really was the thing I'd be happy with. But I've also recently been toying with the idea of getting a ring, nipple ring. So
I would be very careful if you went to any parties or anything with that kind of thing. And I know from experience that even running for a bus can cause extreme pain if it's rubbing against anything. So
I have that. There are some stories.
I would urge caution.
That hurt.
So we can expect to see you at more parties with your shirt off, in order that your nipple can have free reign.
Dancing well away from everyone else. Yeah. Sort of arms out like
personal
that.
Space suddenly becomes really important.
And with that, I think we can probably end. I'll thank our guests, Agent Sparrow, Consolas, Rosie, Sparkling, Cameron, and Jane, and say goodbye from me, Mation.
Can we go to the pub now?